sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
Here I am.
There you are.
Johnny. Right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
The movie we're reviewing has Jack Nicholson's dad in it, right? Did I get that right?
Son. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was his dad.
You thought it was his dad?
He's a 130-year-old. Yep.
Oh, okay. You're talking about Naomi Scott.
you mean Sky Riley, but yeah.
Excuse me, yeah. Rosemary DeWitt. Father of Jack Nicholson.
Father of Jack. Pretending to be his sister. No, just kidding. Sorry, I don't know if anybody knows that whole story about his older sister his entire life. He didn't know it was actually
his mom. Yeah. It's... strangely, a plot point in Chinatown that happened to him. It's real. And welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing Smile 2. As always, Sean will give us the plot in 5 words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We're reviewing Teacup Season 1, Episode 1, titled Think About the Bubbles, which is, I think, is kind of a funny name. But
I don't understand why it's called that.
I didn't catch the bubbles thing. Was that
think about the bubbles? No, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't. Honestly, I don't. For a first episode, this felt like a first episode for a network TV show.
Which, right.
That track, instead of say like a cable show or HBO or, you know, premium channel.
What did it originally air on?
It's on the Peacock, but it feels very you know, I've seen a lot of like TV pilots and just TV shows in general, you know? And this felt like a very NBC type show. Like, yeah. Does that make sense? Like, where they try to just set up things, but it's more or less just we're just meeting a lot of people. And then it seems like the main plot's going to really kind of kick off on the second episode.
Yeah, I gathered that. I also gathered they didn't have a whole lot of money for this pilot.
Yeah, like a singular location.
They did a great job of what they had, but yeah, it's just... there is a sort of like monster transference thing that happens, and it's not like the most impressive thing I've ever seen, but I'm also like, okay, they didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not very like stylized. It seems like camera work or like visuals. It's hard for me to pin down what the aesthetic of the show is. Is that
kind of dark? Track? I think, right, just dark.
Dark. Yeah.
I don't understand why. Why is the guy from Slipknot in this?
Scott Speedman?
No, the guy from Slipknot, the one of the guys that plays on the kegs, he pops out at the end and he's like spray painting the ground.
Oh.
So there's a guy, I'm assuming he's gonna be our main antagonist, I'm assuming, that's got like a gas mask and he kind of looks like a member of Slipknot.
Yeah, I imagine he's the one to, he could still be the antagonist, you're right, but I kind of got the sense that he's gonna be the one that knows about what's actually going on. Whoever it is, I don't even think we got a hint of who that person in the gas mask is.
Yeah, other than they're bald, or like with shaved head, I should say.
Hmm. Is that the non-offensive way of saying something? Shaved head, hairless.
No, I mean like he's clearly got hair, but he just like shaves his head.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. So I think that's only important to note, because like if there's like a bald person, then okay, that's probably the guy. But this person, mm-hmm. whoever they are, could probably grow their hair back out.
Right, yeah. What happened in this episode? More or less just like setting up this family that lives on a ranch. And
yeah, and Kathy Baker plays the mom and she's a fucking junkie. I'm just kidding. I was making this joke before because she's like, oh, she's such a bad person because she smokes weed. I'm like, okay. She has like cancer or something, right?
I felt like she had that moment where she didn't, she said she was going to look for the sun and then just stayed there. She didn't really like try to look for the sun. Like she's kind of like unreliable. The opposite of what you would consider a grandmother.
That's true. I don't really recall what part you're talking about. I think I do recall she's like making something in the kitchen and her daughter comes down, played by Yvonne. What's her last name? Strahovski?
Because I'm tight. Sure. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And she's like, did you see my son? Blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, I heard the front door open. I don't know. So I feel like nobody really gives a shit about each other in this family. I feel like Scott Speedman's character cheated on his wife for the second time, apparently. Which there's a whole conversation that really like made me like this episode. Where Scott Speedman's talking to the neighbor, and then you kind of gather that he cheated on his wife with the neighbor and told his wife that he cheated on her, but not with who.
Mm-hmm.
And he's having this whole conversation about like, yeah, the first time I did that, their older daughter, who in this episode is only seen in her bedroom listening to music and being smart with books and shit for whatever reason. And he's like, yeah, she went missing. We couldn't find her for like, I don't know, like 12 hours or something. And I was so scared. I had just read her Hansel and Gretel and she wanted to see if she could fit in the oven and the door closed on her. And instead of screaming and stuff, she decided to make us find her. And then he's just like, because I was like, man, I hate fucking monologues in first episodes. Like, I don't know you enough to care about what the fuck you're talking about. But then he's like, kids are just so stupid. They're so fucking stupid. I was like, oh my God, yay. All right. This guy gets it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. I don't know how much really happened in this. I mean, I feel like this will be something where we reference it later episodes. We're like, oh, that happened in the first episode. I just didn't think anything of it. It feels kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sets up well because the son gets out because he's trying to chase a lab or some shit or goat, baby goat or lab, whatever the fuck. And it's very cute. And then there's something we see earlier in the episode, really, I think at the beginning, of a Spanish woman being hunted down by a wolf, but it's kind of easy to assume that's probably not a wolf. It's something in a wolf form or something.
Yeah, that's my guess too. Because she's I'm sorry. I was just going to say, when she transfers whatever that is, because she catches a kid, she goes into like rave mode, right? Like her eyes and her mouth turn into like a rave. That's what I mean. Like there wasn't a lot of money for this episode. So it's like,
yeah.
What's going to be the transference thing? They go into rave mode, just like stare into people's eyes and go into rave mode.
Pretty much, yeah. And she kind of transfers something. So it's kind of setting up this, the kid's not going to be normal, I guess. Right. There's very little. There's like an older daughter, and there's the neighbor's. There's like a neighbor's son or something, right? And
he's a little off, right?
He seems a little off. He seems like awkward at this point. It's hard to tell what kind of.
It almost seems like they're setting him up to be like a red herring.
Yeah, I could see that too. And then I didn't really get much of an impression of them. I like that this episode focused on... Unfortunately, this episode focused on the fact that she's like a veterinarian for horses, right? And I guess their neighbors brings horses. and like, oh, it cut itself up. And then he's just like, the poor horse just got dabbed with, you know, fake blood and fake whatever. Blood. Yeah. Yeah, poor thing. I just think like, poor horse. It's just, why am I all wet? It's like, what is this? So, and it wasn't, I guess to that point, it wasn't that most convincing scarring.
No.
Imaginable.
What, she needs to pull some sort of thorn or something from the side, and she's like, this is very close to a major artery. So there is a chance the horse could die or whatever. And she pulls a thing and it just like bleeds out. And she's like, oh, we're going to be okay. And I'm like, patch the fucking horse up. What are you doing?
Yeah. I hope they don't focus anymore on this part of the show because this was not good.
No, it was not believable.
It's hopefully it's just one of those things that happens only in this episode. And then we can quickly move on to whatever the story is about. And we never mention again that she's a veterinarian for horses because this was not good. But I guess they were trying to have something happen, right? Some sort of event happen. I think this is what they came up with, which is fine. But again, like we mentioned, I think it was kind of a pilot shot on the cheap.
Like, I don't know. Yeah, it begs a lot of questions. Like, is she going to be saving the life of this whatever creature that's pretending to be a wolf? Or
right, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play in. Potentially, yes, that she may heal the animal at some point. It's hard to tell. Very little in terms of, like, they thinly sketched what this show's going to be about.
Very thinly. I mean, it was still engaging enough to be like...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do we watch for like the first like three episodes? We're like, dude, this show might suck. I feel like I'm not being very specific because I feel like we've done that with at least like four shows.
A handful of shows, yeah.
I mean, but we sat through Chapel Wait,
waiting for it,
waiting for something. Right? I was like, damn, it sucks. I don't know.
Archive, maybe one. We don't think we were fans of that. Was a
no, but we did finish it.
Yeah, it's hard to remember the ones we didn't finish. Honestly, I just quickly forgot about them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's that. I'm gonna change the subject real quick because I don't know. What to
say about that. It's not in the script, John. No, I don't know where we're going.
I went to the Game Awards on Friday, which I didn't realize had become such a big deal.
Oh, yeah, cool. See
Harrison Ford talk about the new Indiana Jones game.
Which is great, by the way. I've been playing it.
Ella Purnell was there, and I whispered to my partner. I'm like, I talk shit about her on the podcast. Aaron Paul was there. 21 pilots performed, but there was only two of them. So I think this orchestra filled in for the other 19.
Yeah.
And then I saw Snoop Dogg perform. And I guess he's... making or he's working on making a company with his son to develop video games.
Yeah, I saw the Game Awards too. I ended up worked that day. I was kind of bummed. I worked that day, but I ended up catching up after I came back from work.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty fun.
I didn't see you, so I don't know.
You know what's funny? So whenever they did the announcements on whatever stage where you could see the main stage behind you, behind them.
Right, yeah, and they're like,
I was literally
secondary pre-show stage
in the row right in front of that, so I didn't bother to like turn around and like look right behind me, but they were right behind me doing that, so I was like five rows in from the front, so I got to see everybody. Like, it was very close.
That's good.
And it's pretty insane. I have to give a shout out to my friend Hannah for hooking it up with tickets. She was like, do you want to see what I've been working on for like the past 3 months? I'm like, sure, yeah, why not? And then every time Tess and I bring it up, people are like, oh shit, you went to that? And it's like, oh wow, okay, yeah, I was there.
Yeah, yeah, it was actually a good year. Say it was the best one in years.
Yeah, pretty cool
stuff. Quickly, what was one of the trailers you liked? What are you excited about?
They're finally in the final stages of releasing a goddamn new Borderlands game, finally, which I'm pretty excited about. Mm-hmm. Borderlands 4 is finally, they debuted a trailer and it looks fucking rad.
Mm-hmm.
The Indiana Jones game, of course. They did. Aaron Paul voiced a character in this new game called Dispatch, I think, which looks really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's kind of like an Iron Man type guy, but he loses his armor and something happens. They hire him to kind of just dispatch heroes to like certain parts of like crimes or whatever, and that's kind of what your thing is before you become a like Iron Man again.
Mm-hmm.
They debuted a new Turok game, which looks fucking rad.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually going to be a new Virtua Fighter game.
I thought that Series Forever was Virtual Fighter, but yeah, it's Virtua Fighter.
Virtua Fighter, yeah.
Virtua. I've always thought it was Virtual Fighter.
I was telling Tess how I remember playing that like as a fucking single digits kid at like an HEB arcade. And I was like, the reason I don't like think Minecraft is good is because that's what all the graphics look like back then. So I'm like, why am I going to play a game like that?
Yeah.
But there was, they were like Naughty Dog popped up on the screen and everybody like fucking freaked out, right?
Orgasmed. Yeah.
And then, yeah, you know, it was like, you see the spores and all that shit, and everybody's like, oh shit. And then it was just Last of Us 2 Remastered, and we're like, oh.
Okay. Oh. They showed a trailer of The Last of Us 2 Remastered.
Yeah.
That's coming out soon, isn't it? Like, it's coming out.
Very, very, very soon, yeah.
Like, February or some shit.
The new Witcher game looks really cool, where you play as what's her name?
Cersei, yeah.
That looks badass. And then there was one game I didn't catch the name of it because it was like in, I think, Japanese or something. So I was like, I feel dumb.
Yeah.
I'm not going to remember this. But it's 1912 somewhere in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of walking around and there's like a bunch of like, it looks really fucking badass. And you're first person walking around third person, I should say, walking around. And people just keep attacking you and you just keep brutally fucking people up. I'm like, I like this. I don't know what it is, but I like it.
Yeah, it's I don't think it has an official title yet, but it's from the guys that made the Yakuza games, Like a Dragon.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Oh, they beat the trailer for the new Mafia game coming out.
Mm-hmm. That looks pretty good. Yeah,
the supposed to be like a prequel, right? Like a early.
I played a little bit of the first Mafia game recently. I thought it was pretty good.
Nice, yeah. So this one looks pretty cool. It's all, you know, I don't know, early 1900s-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going back to Italy, the motherland. Yeah, it was a really good show. That's cool that you went to go. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was fun. I had a good time. I had more fun doing that than watching Teacup. Just kidding.
Well, obviously. But what is it? I was going to ask, did you or anybody you went with know about Okami?
I know of Okami, like the video game industry.
The video game, yeah.
Oh, the video game.
They had the trailer reveal, and they're bringing on the original director who quit Capcom many years ago. Who had a company called Clover, who worked with Capcom, and he made the OG Resident Evil games.
Right, right.
And then he made Okami and the other, you know, big games, and then like left. And started Platinum Games for like over a decade, but then recently left them and went back and started a company called Clovers, that works with Capcom, and he's making a sequel to Okami, which is a freaking great game. I guess it kind of shows in the trailer, right? It's like this wolf who like basically is like a deity god or whatever that brings it, like when it shine lights on it creates flowers around it around the wherever it travels. That's pretty much the whole game. And then it's like you have to you have to use like a stylist, or it's very like you have to draw stuff, draw symbols and draw where it goes, and it's like kind of interactive. Super fun, really, really cool. It's like almost Zelda-ish like game kind of game.
Oh, gotcha.
But with like a wolf and stuff. So it was really fun. I played it. A remastered version on Switch. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it was kind of hard to keep track because the actual video games portion of it or awards portion of it were so quick. It was like, here are the nominees for this and literally, and the winner is this. Like, it would happen within like 5 minutes and then they're like, okay, debut another 30 fucking trailers. I'm like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the criticism they have is like they should spend more time with the people who win the awards, you know, speech-wise, than the trailers. But let's be honest, the reason why the show's so popular is because it does have Naughty Dog's new game or like CD Projekt Red's new game reveal and stuff. So so it's basically like a commercial for video games with a little bit of awards. So I think they
very little, yeah.
They try really hard to like strike a balance, but I kind of get annoyed because it's like they just like rattle off like you said, like rattle off like three award winners and don't even have them speak or talk or anything, and then it's like, okay, here's 5 more minutes of trailers, and it's a little bit of a disservice. But
I wouldn't even say like 5 minutes, it was like 20 minutes at a time. I'm like, shit.
Yeah,
because it was like whatever I think was being showcased on the thing, and then they had on the smaller TVs they would show like more trailers for other games. And
yeah, because I guess they had commercial breaks and all the commercials were just trailers. Yeah. So it's just
that's where we needed to leave early to go make another event, and our friend Hannah was like, oh yeah, just like leave during the commercial breaks. And then like late into the show I was like, so maybe I misunderstood, where was a commercial break?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it's a bit fucking confusing, isn't it? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I have no idea. And we were so far up front that I was like, I didn't want to embarrass myself by like leaving during something and the camera's pointing at us, because like all the important people were sitting near us.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I always buy a camera. I was like, okay, smile again.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a good year for games.
It was a good year for games. Just...
According to these trailers, it's going to be a good year for games.
That's true. That's true.
30,000 trailers I saw.
Like none of the, like any of the big ones are not even coming out next year. So it's like the ones people are talking about. But from what I remember, so like that Naughty Dog game is not coming out anytime soon. So
no. I saw a lot of 2026. I'm like, oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah. Alrighty.
Just play Fortnite again. Just kidding.
Yeah. But in a new console, when you upgrade, you get your PS5 Pro for 700 bones. You can play Fortnite.
I think I should. I mean, I need a new TV too, but I was realizing like these games all look really cool, and apparently I'm not allowed to play any of them because my console's all but obsolete at this point.
Almost four, right? You have four. Do you have the Pro version?
No.
It's just four. Four's not even HD, is it? Or something like that?
Is. Yeah.
It's like 4K. Is it 4? It's something. I don't remember. I don't play PlayStation. It's like one of them, I think Pro does 4K. But I mean, here's my argument. It's hard to do 4K type stream because not a lot of internet supports it, you know? So it's like you're paying for it to possibly do 4K. You gotta have to, it just depends on the internet, especially if you're like all digital and you're not playing video game, you know, you're not buying, you don't have a hard drive or disk or some shit.
But I mean, it's also, my TV only goes up to 1080. That's what I'm saying. My television is kind of old. I've had it for like almost 10 years. So I never saw the point in buying that. I was like, I might as well just buy the $300 one.
Yeah.
And then wait and buy the PS5.
Well, I know a place that sells affordable TVs, John.
Oh, shit. Circuit City.
Radio Shack.
Yeah, that's...
That's Teacup. Not bad. You want to just stick with it and see where it goes?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Alrighty, let's move over to our main review of Smile 2. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Smile 2, coming in at number three for Johnny's five-word review. I need a new brain. There you go. That's it. And coming in at number two for Smile 2, Johnny's obsessed with Sky Riley. And coming in at number one
for Smile 2. Did you skip over that? Okay.
Coming in at number one for Smile 2, one long commercial for Prozac. Because everybody's so happy.
Yeah, so this is a... You know, it's funny. I think we reviewed this movie almost the same time last year. And we both really enjoyed it. And now a year later... Oh, no, was it... Maybe... When did the first one come out? I may have that wrong. It may be 2 years. But we both were... If I recall, we both were surprised and big fans of the first movie.
2 years.
2 years, yeah. We both were big fans of the movie, and the same writer-director returns, Parker Finn. And this is kind of like his baby, right? Like, he's done a short that was very kind of a origin story for one of the characters in Smile, if I remember. And then this one kind of is picks up after it, so.
Like, pretty much right after, right? I think that's
right. Right, yeah. In other words, like, he continues, like, my biggest concern going into Smile 2 was, especially how fast this one kind of came out, was that it's going to be more of a rehash of the first one. The same, that it wasn't going to be anything, yeah, just nothing new, which was, I found the original Smile to be incredibly original, you know, and it really kind of announced, you know, Parker Finn's voice to horror. So, John, what are your first thoughts on it?
I think it's a hell of an improvement. And that's because, like you said, we both liked the first one a lot. And I was like, damn, this one's like really fucking good. I thought it was a great little play on, with the exception of the cold open, this is all Sky Riley's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Which the first one, I don't think, did that. It wasn't always Sosie Bacon's perspective. It was like, would shift every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was kind of like wild to just go on this like roller coaster of like, what the fuck's going on in my life? And you're not going to get any real answers because you're seeing what she's seeing, which I found really cool. I did have a conversation with somebody about, like, I just kind of wish they would really lay out what was real and what wasn't. I was like, I don't think it would have made sense because it's always her perspective.
Yeah, I think I was definitely felt intentional, right? Yeah. Like, even in the first one, the character had trouble with reality, right? Like, discerning what was real, what wasn't. So it's kind of more or less kind of was the same thing. I felt like if it was too, and it kind of is like, this is what this thing does. That's kind of like, those are the ground rules it's set, where it's distorting your reality, driving you insane. And I like that they phrased it that it's sort of appetizing on you, eating away at you and all your insecurities and fears and your worst, you know, emotions and stuff. And then it's done with you after a week and then it moves on. So that was a different perspective. It kind of simplified a little bit and it made it a little more, it told what was going on with her.
Right.
And what to expect.
And also appreciate it. They didn't try. It's like you're getting a little more information about what this thing is, but they're not going to tell you what it is because it would probably ruin the movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I did read that Parker Finn does eventually want to make kind of an origin story of this character, you know, this creature or whatever. But
because I'd imagine if he tries to do a follow up to this movie, it would be way more expensive considering what happens at the end.
Oh yeah, it's true. It kind of feels like a finale, right? This feels like the end.
Yeah,
considering what happens, there's no way to do that movie.
It's very like, I feel like we compared it to It Follows, but I feel like It Follows, you can fight that thing. This one, it feels more like The Grudge. I think it's, you're just kind of fucked. And this movie really sells that, like, oh, sorry. Like, there's one way to get out of it, which they explain in the cold open, right, with what's his name from the first movie?
Yeah, Kyle Gallagher.
Kyle Gallner.
Gallner. Yeah.
Which that was cool. That whole sequence where he's trying to horrifically kill the drug dealer's brother in front of him. And then the guy fucking dies and he's freaking out and he doesn't realize that there's another person in the room the entire time.
Yeah, and he was the one who kind of linked these two movies together. And he does that, the way he's doing it is because he was a cop, right? So he's trying to like do it in a way where it's like, oh, I'm doing it to bad people, so therefore it justifies. That's why he's having like, if people had only seen the second one for whatever reason, not seen the first one, that may not be clear, right? That he was a cop or whatever. But the point gets made or whatever, that how it spreads, like how it spreads, I was almost lost on, because the guy that passes it on to Sky Riley, like, I was just like, how is this connected? Like, how are they getting connected? But I was like, oh, it's the friend was there. Oh, that, yeah. I didn't
her drug dealer. Yeah.
Her drug dealer. Yeah. I didn't make that connection right away. I was like, how are they gonna, but then I thought about it. I was like, oh yeah. Cause the guy has very distinctive, like, long hair. So I was like, and I remember him right at the blonde kid. Yeah. I really remember him at the end of before what's his name gets dies. So
there's a whole conversation. That's why I was like, oh, it's gonna follow this guy now, or like we're gonna follow this guy's story. Mm-hmm. Which is why I was confused when he's like, I'm sorry that this is happening to you, and he kind of explains, or he tries to explain something, and he's like, I'm sorry, and he fucking leaves. And I think before he can explain how to get rid of it, a bunch of other drug dealers show up or something, and they're trying to shoot him.
yeah, pretty much.
And my assumption is one of the drug dealers coming in had a truck that nobody saw, because they're out in the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, there's literally nothing out there. And Kyle Gallner runs across this back open road and gets hit by a truck, and it's like, how does nobody see this guy running across the street, and or how does he not notice that there's a truck barreling down the fucking road? There's nothing out there. It's like,
right,
basically where we grew up. But I'm assuming it was one of the drug dealers, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, that was a little unclear, but it very well could have been like they could have been all part of the same group, right? Yeah. But yeah, I will say tonally, the thing I was worried about again was that, like, maybe it was going to be too similar. But I think that these movies, like, it's the same basic plot, I guess, for the most part, for this creature that haunts somebody over a 6-7 day period or whatever. But I thought the approach was different than the first one, which I really liked. Like, Sky Riley's having a completely different thing than the character had in Smile, and I like that it's a lot about like people that go through some trauma or like are mentally
major trauma
or have like, you know, are mentally unhealthy or something, you know, along those lines, and it kind of deals with those characters. And her thing was a little different from the other character, which I liked, and even the approach, the filmmaking approach, because I felt like, maybe, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like I thought Smile had more incidents of violence, and there's a lot more, it was more like shocking kind of gory violence, and I thought this movie had similar moments, but it was more psychological in a way, more in the realm of like Kubrick or like Argento kind of you know, style.
No, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I feel like the first one was, yeah, you're right, more shock value. But you're also, you know, you're also very correct. And Sosie Bacon's character was just a doctor trying to help somebody. And you know, what you just mentioned right now, Sky Riley's got trauma. She's somebody who went through a horrific accident and is trying to make her comeback, and she's like, you know, a world famous pop star. And I like how they Parker Finn solidifies that by fucking casting Drew Barrymore to an average show.
Drew Barrymore and up.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, that makes it more believable. Like, oh, this person's like ultra famous. Got it.
I almost think, like, if this movie was made 30 years ago, Drew Barrymore would play this character. So, yeah. But I also like the touch of, like, the thing where Scarlett has this condition where she, like, pulls her hair out, which is actually a real thing people do, because it's a real, like, tick when they're dealing with stress. That's some people release their stress by pulling out their hair and stuff like that. And
which is why you see the same people, I think, learn to have, they have like a bunch of rubber bands around their wrist.
Mm.
And instead of pulling hair out, they pull on the rubber bands and hit themselves to like mildly cause pain. And it kind of relieves that tick.
Yeah. Like, I did try this. I read about it and I tried it because I, one of my bad habits is I bite my nails.
Oh yeah. So you're going to hear first, folks. Rolando's finally going to explain why he has no hair.
No hair. No, I mean, if you really want to get to
Pan Am, no, I
actually, like, I did. Well, there's two things. So I did try to, when I did, was trying not to bite my nails. They told me to just like do a repetitive circle on your arm or something like that until the feeling passes, which I did for a good while, and then quickly stopped doing it. So I still have that habit, but the pulling of the hair, actually I did have that too, but I would pull, since I don't have any actual hair, I pulled the leg hair.
Pubic hair. Oh, leg hair.
Leg hair, pubic hair. No. It's very neatly trimmed, John. Come
on. It's all connected down there. That's where
it's all connected. Yeah, I would pull off like riff up like hair from my legs. It was pretty bad. Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I have a tick where, like, I find, like, little, I don't think pimples is the right word. Like, you know, you get, like, small little things on your arms that you can't see, but, like, I'll feel around and then, like, squeeze them, and I develop that tick during 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So my arms always look like fucking pizza, for lack of a better description. Like,
it's
just
like... It's like, do you remember that scene where Freddy is eating pizza with little kids? Like that. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, I will say my criticisms, things I didn't like about this movie, is I
didn't felt like the dancers. Just kidding.
In a way, no. I thought a lot of the more intense, scary moments in this movie were a little too much over the top, to where I feel like I was pulled out of these moments. Specifically, you know, like,
I could see that, but I'm also realizing, like, I should have watched this in theaters. I kind of goofed. I feel like those moments would have been cooler. I feel like there was like sound cues are missing, and
yeah, that's true. I would specifically say, like, when she's doing the signing of the stuff, and that little weird girl with the eyebrows shows up the pigtails. Yeah. I felt like, I understand that it's probably very intentional. Like, I think Parker Finn's a smart filmmaker, you know? And so, like, it's very intentional the way he's portraying the little girl that's not the little girl. It's whatever this thing is. But it's very much like a comedic moment.
Kind of, yeah, because it was kind of goofy. That is something somebody brought up too. Like, I didn't get that. Like, how come nobody else is like, oh, this little girl's acting weird? And it's like, again, I feel like if you don't watch the first one and then watch this one right after, or within like a short, you know, if you at least try to remember the first movie, people that were infected by this thing could see these people smiling at them, but nobody else could see that. They would just see like a normal person going like, why is this woman looking at me?
And I feel like they did, the film did a good job of explaining that she's clearly somebody that's seeing things, you know. There was like she's having like this mental breakdown. I think they made it very clear. And I feel like, as much as I like Naomi Scott in this role and her music and everything, so I feel like there were moments where I felt like they were. You could tell that she was pushing herself to like get there, to really show those like moments. And sometimes I don't think they all landed, you know, just for me, just like just performance wise, I feel like she was pushed into like deep waters. I don't know if she, for me, didn't like perfectly make those moments, because it's a lot of like her being like terrified and scared, and you can only do, in my opinion, you can only do so many variations of that where it's like where else could I go? It's gonna get bigger and bigger and bigger, right? So very well could have been her direction, right? Too. So but yeah, I think there was just a bit too much comedy, like unintentional comedic moments with some of the stuff. What'd you think?
Yeah, no, I was okay with all of it. I just really liked this movie. What was it? Something I gotta give her is she worked with, I just don't want to get this wrong. So she did help write, and she does sing all these songs, and they released an EP, which I've been listening to a lot. Because I was like, this is like really good. Okay, so Naomi Scott co-wrote several of the Sky Riley songs with producer Alexis Adaros Kieselman.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when you find the EP on any sort of streaming thing, it's titled, I mean, you can just write Smile 2, it'll pop up. And it's called Smile 2, the Sky Riley EP. And the artists are Sky Riley and Naomi Scott, which I thought was funny, but it's like, I don't know if, there's no way.
The made-up character did any tribute anything. Right? Yeah.
So I hope that's not spoiling anything, but there's like, I think you kind of get the idea what's going to happen, like pretty much at the beginning of the movie. You're like, oh, okay.
Right. And I like that, actually. I think that was really smart. Like, this easily could have been very unbelievable. And I think the work they did with, especially since Naomi Scott already has like a, like is a musician, she could sing, she could do all these things, and it actually adds to the movie. So I wonder if that was something the director was looking for, somebody that can really sell you on the believability of a pop star going through something like this.
What did she say? She modeled a lot of everything after
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Definitely, look is there. The whole look is there. Yeah. Yeah, it's all there.
So, I do have one major complaint. Something that I just was bugging the shit out of me this entire fucking movie. I'm not even gonna look it up, but whoever the fucking costume designer was, I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, every single person's outfit, I'm like, what is this?
Which part? All of them? Just general? Yeah. Yeah.
Probably with the exception of the beginning, and I get it's supposed to be like, oh, this is supposed to be like high class, like they're rich and blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, not everybody dresses like fucking Kanye West though. Like,
yeah,
I was like, these outfits are fucking atrocious. I'm sorry. And I get the symbolism of the butterfly or whatever costume, but I was also like, this looks terrible.
I don't know if I paid too much attention to those things, but yeah, I thought they didn't leave an impression on me either. I'll say that. None of the look. She did have really nice, striking blonde hair. Yeah. That was cool.
That was cool. Yeah. Her dramatically trying to change her image, and it worked really well, because I feel like if I didn't know who this actress was or like who the character was, I'd be like, who's this person? And when they do the flashbacks of what happened to her, you see that she has, she looks like regular Naomi Scott.
You're right. Yeah. Just maybe a longer black hair or something.
Which I don't know if that's a spoiler, but man, that was a hell of a scene. With Jack Nicholson's son.
I was okay with it. I was okay. It didn't land on me too much, I would say. I liked it. It was fine. But it seemed a little cliched, I think. Little on the nose, but it was interesting the way he shot it, because that's kind of what he carried over into a lot of the action scenes. This sort of like panning first person in getting these really close ups, like almost extreme, you know.
Yeah.
But then kind of keeping the camera moving, kind of, you know, like handheld, even though a lot of it isn't. A lot of that particular scene was shot on green screen, but
yeah, sure.
But it mirrored the first scene, which was kind of done in, you know, kind of third person behind the back, you know, kind of thing.
Okay. Oh, I have to ask though. So you felt like that was cliched. What about it felt cliched, and what would you have done differently, I guess?
Oh, okay.
Because I think it's really there to solidify she had issues with not just drugs, but control over life.
Yes. I just think that rock stars doing drugs, or famous people doing drugs, fighting, going super fast down a snowy road, and then like there's really not much, like, it was cool that how they crashed. Didn't see that coming, right?
That's where I was saying, like, that was fucked up. That was like, that's equal parts horrific and sad.
Mm-hmm. I would just say, like, everything leading up to it, because the way they're fighting and the dialogue, I thought was not, like, punchy enough. You know what I mean? It didn't really catch my attention. But the result of it, the effect of it, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So would rather have her and maybe not be a pop star, and, like, what if she was, like, a world-famous surgeon and then gets in this accident, and then her hands are all, you know, she's become crippled from the fingers, and she has to learn the mystic arts
from Tilda Swinton. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Right.
That's what that scene kind of reminded me of. I was like,
yeah. Similarly. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
Jack Kirby wrote this.
Jack Kirby wrote this. Where's the credits? Paramount. Yeah. Everybody rips from Kirby. It was fine. I don't know. It's just like cliched idea of, like, oh, he's a rock star, drug problems and all this other stuff is like, it's a line. It's a balance he had to reach, right? Because he's telling interesting, like, deep psychological story of this character, Sky Riley, who is like this pop star. Right. Or whatever, and life, and it, that scene didn't quite, like, still trying to tell that story of, like, he's gonna have to lean into, like, pop star story, cliched pop star, you know, into drugs and tries to recover, but then also, like I said, like, the more interesting aspects of it were, like, her psychological breaks in the darker side of her character and stuff. Would you say this character is very unlikable? Did you have any empathy for her, considering how the movie ended?
That's a tough one. I want to say, yeah. I mean, a little bit, because you know, I think ultimately what this journey that you take with this woman is, you realize a lot of the major issues she had were not really all 100% her fault. I think, like, Rosemary DeWitt played a very subtle, like, I didn't realize it was her mom until, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, a second act or something, or, like, I don't know, so, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, she kind of sucks. Like, the whole thing is just about, like, hey, make sure you go back on tour. You know, we just got to do this. We can't embarrass ourselves. So I think, like, this is a child star, you know, dealing with never having taken a break, never getting her Hayden Christensen moment.
So where he's crying at D23 stuff. They accept me. before we get into spoilers, I'll say, like, I think they did what I really liked is that I would say I don't have empathy for her. I'll play devil's advocate and say I don't have empathy by the end of this movie. I think she's not a likable character. Even though, yes, even though a lot of her choices are out of her control, right? Because she probably was micromanaged by her mother and told, you have to look like this and do this. And I think the filmmaker does a really good job of isolating her. And she's, like, very, very isolated, very alone all the time. She doesn't have any real friends. She doesn't have, good family support, and she can't trust anybody. And a lot of that was, so a lot of the behavior she exhibited before when she was on drugs was probably because of that, because she probably was not equipped, mentally to deal with a lot of the pop star life or whatever. And so that, I think that kind of like tells about the second part of the movie and about the actual movie. And I think that, like, just based purely on her behavior, I wouldn't find her character like empathetic enough.
I see what's going on. It's because she treated poor Alfredo like a piece of shit.
Yes.
I was joking about that character. So this character is like got some sort of leprosy, and he's like unhealthily like obsessed with Skye Riley.
Right. Yeah.
And then kind of mentions things like we could be together while he's doing like a photo op thing. And I was saying out loud, like, hey, bud, we got a part for you. He's like, all right, what's it in? He's like, smile too. He's like, hell yeah, what is it? Okay, well, you're going to have to be naked and have your skin fall off. And it's not even dealing with the monster. But I can see where you're coming with that. And also, I need to quickly shout out one of our hometown friends, Raul Castillo, is in this movie.
I was confused about what he was, but then I thought he was the boyfriend, but he was not the boyfriend.
He was the tour manager, I think.
The tour manager. Yeah, he worked with the record company or something along those lines, right? Like, he was like publicity or something. Okay, cool. Did you want to go into spoilers?
Yes.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. Skye Riley is now
smiled.
She finally smiles at the end.
It's happy. Here's my question. Like, we know that she's seeing things. She's imagining that she reunited with her friend, but clearly she hadn't. Which is, I think, one of the bigger twists. But what do you think is happening at the very, very end when she finally confronts the monster and she's there with the stage and we see the mother there in the audience with the other tour people that she's associated with? And do we think that that's all happening like in real life? Or is it happening? It's only inside her mind.
I think that's all happening in real life. There is a moment where she realizes she's not drinking the water, like she's dehydrated, like, and she's, like, what's going on? She goes back home, and then she sees like all her backup dancers are all like appearing out of nowhere, smiling and doing like these intense, like, feels like a music video.
But, yeah.
I think at that moment when they pin her down and they shove, like, somebody shoves their arm into her throat, it's like all in her head what's going on until the very end. And we've already established in the first one that people get possessed by these things and it's not like they're there anymore. They're just being controlled by whatever this thing is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was playing out this whole situation in her head where she's thinking she's going to be able to get rid of it, but she's already fucked. And then when the beast goes break a leg, I think that was the demon monster, whatever's plan all along. Because the demon talks to, I'm going to call it a demon because at some point somebody calls it a demon. The demon talks to her more in this movie than the demon talked to Sosie Bacon in the first one. There's like more conversations that are had.
Yeah,
I agree with that. The demon thing is all like, kind of saying like I took a liking to you, blah blah this, blah 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 that. And I think it becomes clear at the end because the demon needed her to spread this thing at a mass level,
right,
in Poughkeepsie, New York. I don't know. So I think that's all real. Of course, all they're seeing is Skye Riley is just smiling, not doing anything, while she's witnessing the monster from the first thing like kind of engulf her.
So is it fair to say that she did kill her mother? the mother was from that scene. The mother's alive, right?
No, well, see, you see what I'm saying is when the dancer things shove their arm down her throat, she passes out, she wakes up in the hospital. I don't think any of that is happening because it's all in her head at that point until right. the very end. So this thing is like making her think that she killed her mother, that people are after her. So she's become more paranoid and more, you know, being able to really feed off her shit, like going nuts.
So we can say the stuff that happened with the, she tried to have that surgeon help her. That did happen. Is that safe to say? None of that happened
either. No,
it's just like false hope. Right. Well, like
kind of like in the first one where Sosie Bacon thought like
she beat it
confronting her mother, like the demon version of her mother was going to help anything. And it didn't. It's just, I think whatever this thing is needs these things to happen. Like right. one last bit of hope or something.
Yeah. And so with that said, I think it's a huge swing, like the way it ends, like, so how do you, like we were saying earlier, how do you make a sequel about how the fact that she finally succumbs to the whatever demon thing takes full control of her, and then with there in front in the concert, and she ends up like killing herself, which was how that it transfers over. But then there's like all these millions of people.
Yeah.
So we don't know if it's going to maybe do one person, do all of these people.
I think it's, you know, them, yeah.
Yeah. And Parker Finn said something to the effect that he wanted that ending partly because he wanted to show like the way, I think the way the fans obsess about stars and push them and, you know, want to know every little detail about them. Like maybe did the audience push her to that point, you know, of like killing herself, I think is the sort of like bigger questions he's kind of raising, which is actually interesting. I know I'll probably put my, you know, my foot in my mouth by saying like, there's no way they're going to make a straight sequel for this, but, but I'm pretty sure he's a smart guy. He'll probably figure it out. Right. Like
it'd probably only focus on a few people at a time, but I don't think it would be anybody's sole story again.
Right. Yeah.
Which would be interesting to watch. I don't know. Yeah. It's, I'm the also implications wondering about like the people in the audience. Like if I saw that happen, I'd be like, oh man, that's fucked up. But I've also grown up watching Faces of Death and shit like that. So this is just a bummer, really. Like, would it still affect me? Would it still be like, oh, I want to kill you if I was real like, oh, well, shit happens.
Yeah. Or like that fan that tried to stab Chappelle here in LA. Or he, I don't know if he tried to stab him, but he tried to like fight him or something. So
yeah,
that you had seen that's the sequel. It's gonna be about comedians with Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow.
The cold open is just no lines given to him. It's just somebody brutally torturing and murdering Andrew Schultz, right? Jesus. I have an opinion on this. So he's become like a right wing comedian darling, right? And he recently came out saying, oh, Kendrick has like shit to say about me, but like, and he's telling all these other black comedians, like, I mean, what's he gonna do? You know, like, I'll pin him down and he can't get away from me and I'll, you know, have my way with him and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this guy's making a gay rape joke? Like, what is, what are the rules with conservative people? Like, they hate gay people, they hate all this, but man, they can't wait to rape somebody, a black guy. I don't know. Like,
it's fucking football teams, bro. If you're not on the right team, you're the enemy. That's all it is. It's what politics is reduced to, teams.
Yeah.
Just whatever team you play for. So anyway.
And that's my review of Smile too.
So. Vote, people, vote. Yeah. All right, cool. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
No, wait.
don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give Smile 9 sexy spooky bones.
I've been kind of going back and forth. I want to say that I enjoyed the movie, so in no way my score will reflect truly reflect how I felt about it.
I'm going to give it a 7.
I'm going to give it a 7. I liked it. I liked it a lot, and I enjoyed it, but like I don't think I was like, and I'm not comparing them either. Just as a film itself, I think I had a little less fun than I did the first one. But so I'll give it a 7. I think I gave it pretty high marks 2 years ago or a year ago whenever we reviewed it. But
it came out in 2022.
Yeah. So I think whenever we reviewed it, yeah, I think I gave it maybe an 8 or something, 8 or 9. But I would say it's a little bit less, just personal taste, because I think that Parker Finn is a really interesting filmmaker that's sort of broken through and is writing, directing his own movies in a studio system, which is uncommon at this point. Very few people are doing that. So it's good to support somebody like that. Alrighty.
Oh, one more question. Sky Riley or M. Night Shyamalan's daughter?
This is very similar, right?
But the correct answer is Sky Riley.
The type of music. Yes, I can listen. I probably will listen to Sky Riley, even though I didn't much care for something head damage song or whatever the fuck brain damage song.
Oh, I need a new brain.
I need a new brain. I didn't care for that one, but
that's like my favorite song right now.
Yeah. I think I probably I'm more of a Reach for the Sky Riley person. Whatever her name was, Shyamalan's daughter.
Yeah, I don't know. Raven or some bullshit. I don't know.
Raven. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals. Thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky. That's my Sky Riley. You're welcome.
Thank you.